The next case was presented by Dr. Bill Harwin of Naples, Florida.
This is a 66-year-old white female who presented with breast cancer in 1985. She was under my care, so I've treated her during the whole course of her illness. She presented with two positive nodes, was estroreceptor and progesteroceptor positive using the fentanyl technique, and was treated with adjuvant Cytoxan methotrexate 5-FU using the classical Bonadonna regimen with oral Cytoxan. She did not receive any adjuvant hormonal treatment, as was standard of care at that time. She did well for many years, and 2 years ago, she required a left hip replacement for aseptic necrosis. She did well for the first year, but then began having left hip pain and was noted radiographically to have some what they described as osteolysis around the prosthesis of uncertain etiology. She was referred to an orthopedic oncologist who performed a bone scan that showed bone metastases, and then she was referred back to see me. We then performed a CT needle biopsy of her liver because she had liver metastases, and this showed breast cancer, ER positive, HER2 negative. Her largest liver metastasis was 6 centimeters, but she had no symptoms, no palpable hepatomegaly, normal liver function tests.
This case brings up the controversial question of optimal management of patients with ER-positive, HER2-negative metastatic disease, particularly people like Dr. Harwin's patient who has asymptomatic visceral disease. Dr. Budd commented on this issue.
One question is endocrine therapy appropriate for this patient? She does have a very long 22-year disease-free interval. She's ER-positive on recurrence. She has been on raloxifene, but otherwise no hormonal therapy. But she has liver metastases, the largest of which is 6 centimeters. These patients with liver metastases can respond to treatment, so that I do think that endocrine therapy is appropriate with care. And someone with large, bulky liver metastases, if it's more than a third, I generally will be a little bit reluctant to use endocrine therapy, but I certainly will generally use endocrine therapy. Otherwise, I do it with care. I will generally do a repeat scan in a month, not looking for a response, but to look for early progression, which might indicate that the patient's going to get into trouble.
Joe, what about this issue with a patient with visceral ER-positive disease? How do you make the decision about whether you can move forward with hormonal therapy in a patient who has visceral disease or whether you need to bring in chemotherapy?
Well, of course, first and foremost are symptoms. Second would be evidence of organ dysfunction as manifested by liver function abnormalities. And third is, actually, I think the advent of PAC systems makes it a lot easier for us clinicians to view images, and I find that often useful to help me make a decision, because it's one thing seeing a report, it's another thing seeing the extent of liver involvement on the scan. So it's something that I try and routinely do when I make a decision, but I would say that the same principles that everyone else has discussed apply.
Joyce, any comments on the sequence of hormonal therapy in the postmenopausal patient? In this case, the physician decided to use fulvestrant to match up with the fact that the patient was going to be in there anyhow. How do you make that decision, and how do you sequence patients?
I think the randomized trial of fulvestrant versus anastrozole basically showed equivalence. Maybe in the North American trial, the duration of response was longer with fulvestrant. So I think with this particular woman with this long disease-free interval, I think it's kind of pretty much of a wide open slate. So I think either an AI or fulvestrant would be very reasonable. I mean, because she was coming in for intravenous anyway, I think the injection would be fine. Usually, though, you'd go with the AI first. And then after that, we have the results of the EFFECT trial, which tell us that either exemestane or fulvestrant would be good for the patient. After that, I usually go on to fluoxymesterone because Suzanne Fuqua's very interesting work showing that the androgen receptor can be a mechanism of resistance to tamoxifen. And about 80 or 90% of ER-positive breast cancers are also AR-positive. And it's interesting to speculate whether buildup of androgens that are not converted to estradiol or estrone because of aromatase blockade could lead to some resistance. So I've had some pretty good success with fluoxymesterone, just 10 milligrams BID. So I use a lot of that. I use Megase. I really do use a lot of endocrine agents for as long as I possibly can.
John, what's new in terms of fulvestrant?
Some women, particularly in countries like Italy, seem to prefer injections. I don't know about North American women, and we know nothing about duration at all. So it's an information thin zone at the present time, and you go with, we're all hearing about gut feelings. You also do that based on probabilities with every patient we treat, even if there's a 30% likelihood of getting a response. We just don't know with the individual woman, but we need as much data as we can get.
Cliff, what about fulvestrant and adjuvant trials? Metastatic disease, or a bunch of trials out there looking at AIs with fulvestrant. There was discussion in the past about delayed fulvestrant. Do you think fulvestrant's ever going to make it into the adjuvant or post-adjuvant setting?
Well, I think that activity should drive that decision. I do think that the hurdle for widespread adoption of it will be greater because it's perennial and frequent. And all else being equal, I think most of our patients in the long-term setting would probably prefer the oral agent, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah, it seems that many of us are waiting for the combination versus the single agent, the fulvestrant anastrozole versus anastrozole trials. I think if we would receive probably any kind of signal from those trials, I think there would be a slot in some cooperative group setting for moving forward in the adjuvant setting. And I think the business about 1 + 1 = 1 kind of still holds a little bit for hormonal therapy, and there's preclinical reasons to think that that won't hold for the anastrozole fulvestrant combination, but we'd like to see a clinical signal.
What do you think about this idea? And Paul Goss presented it. He was the lead presentation at the breast cancer symposium in terms of the concept of intermittent hormonal therapy, intermittent AIs.
They are testing it in a stage 4 setting, but I will just submit that in the adjuvant setting, that would become a remarkable challenge because in a sense, that's about tailoring therapy to the unique biology of an individual patient's tumor. And I don't know that we have the skill set to do that yet.
Joyce, what about the strategy of starting out with chemotherapy and then transitioning to, quote, maintenance hormonal therapy? Some people do it, some don't. What do you think about that strategy?
I think it's reasonable. I think patients will get a plateau on their response, and depending on how they're feeling on it, I think many of us would stop the chemotherapy and go over to an endocrine agent. There have been randomized trials looking at combination versus sequential, and you can get somewhat higher response rates with the combination compared to the sequential, but there's no difference in survival at all. So I think it's a reasonable strategy.
Let's see what happened with Dr. Harwin's patient.
I was interested in seeing if she might respond to hormonal therapy. Here's a woman with a very long disease-free interval of 22 years who's hormone receptor positive, and although she has visceral disease, it's not anything life-threatening. And I also thought that since she really has a lot of cancer, it would be good to try something novel, something a little more aggressive than just standard hormonal therapy. And we have available through the Sarah Cannon Research Network a clinical trial, which is a phase 2 study of either anastrozole or fulvestrant, the physician's choice, plus bevacizumab in patients with hormone-sensitive metastatic breast cancer. I discussed the trial with her. I also recommended radiation therapy to the left hip, which it was allowed concomitant with treatment with the trial. And after reading the informed consent and thinking about it, she elected to proceed. This week we started her treatment, and since she was receiving zoledronate as part of her therapy, along with bevacizumab, which is given every 2 weeks, I thought it made sense to give her the fulvestrant since we don't have to worry about compliance since she's in the office anyway. And she started treatment 2 days ago.